Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Rooted Deep, a podcast featuring Reba Bowman and Allison Hale.
And welcome to the Rooted Deep podcast. We are so excited that you joined us today. Man, if you're joining us for the first time, you're in for a treat today as we have a great interview lined up. And Allison, man, tell us a little bit about who we're interviewing today. I know this is a longtime friend of yours. So talk about that.
Yeah, so JJ and Melissa, he and his wife are missionaries, were missionaries when I met them 20 years ago at a missions conference up in West Virginia. They were missionaries to Togo, and I have never seen somebody be able to sit with my husband for hours in a Starbucks. I mean, everybody knows that Gary's not a Starbucks fan, but for some reason, just Gary's love for missions, JJ's love for just strategic communication. They just, our hearts knit with them. And then we were able to visit them in Togo. And so this has been just a longtime friend. We meet up every once in a while and just sit over coffee and talk.
Oh, that's cool.
And strategize and network. And it's just been a wonderful relationship over the last two decades. And so I'm just excited to talk to him today. I was like, Reba, I know you've met him, but we've got to talk to him again. And we've got to talk about specifically what a lot of times that we use the word community so many times. And I think the way JJ has done, JJ and Melissa have done their ministry in community over the years, whether it's sitting in a Starbucks or whether it's church planting, it's growing. And so we're just excited to have you here, JJ. And I know it's bring your daughter to work day. So you've got a couple of girls off camera that we were just excited to get a glimpse of, but welcome. And we just wanted to jump in and just go ahead and start life story, because you and I share missionary kid bond, right?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Great to be here. Great to get to share this moment with you. So I was 4 years old when my family first moved to Canada to learn French. My dad was a first generation Christian. I think that says a lot about our family tree and what happened there. And he was the one who felt like he was supposed to go. And so he did, not really understanding. I would even say decades ago, the 70s and the 80s looked different than today's world does. So we moved to Canada from Florida, which was quite the shock, did 2 years up there, and then moved over to West Africa. So by the time we moved there, I was six. And then I had three sisters, still do have three sisters, four and twin sisters that are two. And so we moved to this northern area, this country in Togo.
Wow.
Where didn't really understand it. My parents had never been there before. They bought one-way tickets, shipped a container, thinking that everything that they needed was going to be on there. And if they didn't, it didn't matter. We were going to figure it out. And it was. It was a figure-it-out season. It was a go work for it. You know, we look back now as a family at history. And they talk about hard days in the early, you know, 1989, 1990, even saying things like, we were too poor to quit. If we had money, we would have quit and bought tickets home, but we didn't have money for tickets. And they did multiple decades. My parents did, all the way until they retired from that same city where they gave their lives away. So I was there from six, I would say kindergarten to college. I graduated high school, leaving there. So Allie, you and I walked a similar journey just in different areas of the world. And what that does is it seems like it creates tension, because you learn how to love two different cultures, two different places, people that see the world differently, almost in some ways in opposing views, and yet you can love them both and you can appreciate them both. And when you're in one, you miss the other.
Yeah.
And so they're not contradictory, but you learn the beauty of I don't want to say a split life, but a life that looks very different in a couple areas of the world. And so, yes, that's exactly it. Kindergarten to college, West Africa, would not have traded it for the world.
Right.
Wow.
I heard somebody say to me one time, just to kind of bridge what you said, a lot of times in our world, especially when we grow up in two different cultures, instead of I never felt like I didn't fit in either culture. I always felt like I was bridging. And so sometimes I'm defending my Dominican culture to my American friends, and sometimes a lot of times I'm having to defend my American culture to explain,
Sure.
okay, this is what they're thinking, this is how they, communicate. And so it was never, I fit in, and I feel like you did too. I feel like we both kind of fit in where we were at the moment, and I loved that about, and I think a lot of that has to do with our parents, right?
I think you're absolutely right. And thinking of Bridgers, there's something that someone pointed out to me later on in life. But I mentioned my dad is a first gen Christian. I'm a second gen Christian. And oftentimes, as a second gen, we're Bridgers between first and thirds
Yeah.
in the way that we talk about the church world and the way that we talk about the Christian life, based from a first to a third. And so I think you can live that Bridger, some would even call it a C2, where we're in between two different cultures. And there's a beauty in the middle, and there's a beauty in the struggle.
Yeah,
That's
exactly.
awesome. How did growing up as a missionary kid, how do you feel like that really shaped your faith and maybe your future direction? Because we know today you're sitting very involved in missions still. So what did that look like for you?
I'm appreciative of a lot of things, and one of those is that my parents always invited us in, but never forced us in. And so it was a very clear invitation, and I could talk to you about two different sides of it. I could talk to you about, hey, mom and dad, we don't want to go to church. We want to listen to a first culture recording of a sermon from, back in the States at a certain season. And that was a season of my life. And then other seasons were, I'm going to drive the pastor down the road and translate for him and make sure that, everything goes well in a church an hour away, because he needs the transportation. It was an invitation to be a part of it. I've really had no desire to be in ministry early on, until I was 17. God called me into ministry. It was very clear to me. The question was, when it's all said and done, is it really going to count? And we get to count a lot of things in life. And what we count matters, and we can count the wrong things if we don't watch out. And so for me, I wanted to make sure that I was counting the right things. I would say earlier on, going back to that question you started with, Reba, I don't think that you could convince me that God wasn't real from a very early age, because I have seen life change. I have seen the most broken lives be radically transformed because of a relationship with Jesus. And I believe Jesus is the hope of the world. And when we have a relationship with him, that is what gives us hope. And so when I've seen people from any culture, any language, any tribe, they can have a relationship with their creator, I think it changes everything. But then when God called me into it, that's when I had a direction, or very clear direction, I could say, to my next steps.
That's good.
So, okay, well, so we've talked about your childhood and now heading into your calling. So what did that look like? I know because I know you and I know the story, but tell us the story about, okay, now you have the calling, you're headed to the States for college, and what did that look like leaving? Because I mean, I've experienced it, leaving a foreign country, coming into college, a small Christian college, and
Right.
then you land.
That's exactly it. So I, on a one-way ticket back home to the States, and go get a job and set up a bank account and buy a car and enroll and buy your clothes and everything you need. You really have nothing. People in this case because of church partnerships and community. And so we had deep relationships with people that wanted to help, and I'm so grateful for that. And so jumped into college just a couple weeks into that. I would say 10 days in, I ended up meeting this girl, Melissa, and intentionally didn't tell my parents because that would just be more fun to keep it that way. And so just built this friendship. And for 6 months, we're sitting there, building this friendship. And today, March is actually our break-even point. I'll have more days married than not. And so we're just
Okay.
coming up on that right now, just over the 21-year mark for us right now. And so college was a time where I knew I needed to prepare because I had a calling, and at the same time, I knew what the other side looked like. And so I'm grateful for the season. I'm grateful for what I learned there. But I think the greatest part was I learned, and I was mentored by a man who just had an extreme amount of wisdom. And that's really where I learned what mentoring looked like, to be mentored and to try to give your life away to other people. And so I'm forever grateful for that relationship all the way through college and what I learned there. And then on the other side of of college, Melissa and I got married and knew we wanted to head to a place, and like we'd heard from so many others, give your life away.
Yeah.
So you're You know, you're sitting in Africa, you transition back to the US to go to college, you meet a girl, you get married, and now you're transitioning again. And I know
That's
that, you know, when you think about, you know, we talk about life transitions, moving is the number one hardest transition that's listed on the list of transitions. And it's one thing to move across town or to move to Texas, but it's another thing to keep moving internationally. So talk about that a little bit. I mean, was that just in your DNA and that was easier for you than somebody else, or were these transitions tough?
No, you can have hard. It doesn't matter how many times you've done it. It can still be hard. My harder transition was probably to the States going into college. Melissa's was harder going back to Togo, just because it was new for her, learning how to drive a stick shift in a third world country, learning how to work through language. And on top of that, you're negotiating for things at the same time. It's layers of complexity, but it takes grit. And here's the thing that I appreciate is God gives us lessons early on in life that he allows us to be able to build on the next lesson. It's something that we get to learn and grow with. And so for her dad was an airline captain. She had moved around significantly. Now, moving to another country and another place where we move into a house with no doors on the upstairs until those get built, and it's the only place we had to rent. There are complexities to those things, but at the end of the day, you have to take life one day at a time, and it's about a decision. This is what I think I need to do. This is what I should do. I don't have grace for 3 weeks from now, but I do have grace for today. And he's going to give me what I need, and he's going to grow me today for what I need tomorrow. And so looking back, was it easy? No. Was it the right thing? Absolutely. And the Lord used that in our lives. And
Yeah,
so
that's
going
good.
back there to Togo, boy, we look back at those first couple of years. Anytime you want to start something, whether it's starting a new season and your kids are jumping into school, whether it's starting a business or going across the world in a ministry space, it's not easy. It takes a little bit of put your head down and just stay focused and just do it. Do the hard things. And everybody's heart is different, and we have to recognize that. But for us in that season, it's a lot of growing, some hard days, a lot of joy. We're grateful for it.
Yeah, I think after 22 years here in the Dominican, we've seen a lot of missionaries, kind of navigate these transitions, either here or moving, into new ministries even within the country. We had a visitor the other day just talk about it was interesting how many people here, how many of our missionaries have been here, 7, 12, 16 years, and it was exciting, but we've also had missionaries that come for a season and move on, and being able to have, like you said, understand that everybody's heart is different and everybody in grace for today. I think a lot of times we get here and we're like, okay, we made the transition, we moved. Now it's supposed to be easy. And no, it's like, no, you that's one there's more coming, and trying to understand the grace for today concept as we go through these seasons in ministry. So now you guys then you've moved into the ministry, the Togo and the church planting, but you guys had a ministry, I feel like, across the entire country. You had one point where you live, but then you were able to minister across the whole entire, from what I remember, it's been a while.
Well, I'm grateful. I grew up in the north and then we moved to the south. And so that was a different people group. And so we kept those relationships. And it's a friend of mine who said to me years ago, you never know when that relationship is going to circle back around. And Allie, you and I have talked about with Gary and our friendship over a couple of decades. We never see each other enough. We always wish we had more time when we do. We can turn 2 hours into 6 hours pretty easily, talking about a lot of fun things. And yet we're grateful for relationships and the way things circle back around in seasons. And I think that's what ministry looked like for us. It was directly try to impact an area, but also understand how to influence others, how to see things. Sometimes we look at 1,000 feet and we're in the details of it. And sometimes we need to take a step back and look at the big picture and say, what does it look like to reach an entire nation through what we're doing in this space? How do we have intentional ripple effects? And so in that early season, we did the first 8 years with national partners, incredible national partners. And that just means hard. It means hard for all of us as we're starting something at that point in the voodoo capital of the world, in that 50-mile radius of what's happening, probably have more stories than we have time to be able to share of what God did there, his faithfulness. and how he just showed himself to be real and showed up time and time again. About 8 years in, we started having an international team that started to join us. And that was a really fruitful season. Each one was a different season, fruitful for different reasons. But for the last almost 6 years, we had an expat team that joined us, and we worked together as an international team. And that was great as well. That changed community for us, just in a different aspect. Both are good. It depends on what you're focused on.
Yeah.
It's good. You know, you mentioned church planning. I think for a lot of people, that word, they've heard that word a lot, but maybe we don't really understand what in the world does that mean? I mean, when we talk about church planning, what are we saying? I think it would really help if you would kind of help us define that a little bit for those who are listening and wondering, what does that exactly mean and what does that look like?
Well, that's a thank you. Because that is something that I love to think about, love to live for. If you look at the world today, you see that there are probably about 10 million places people live. It's their little community where they go to their bodega to go get their, coffee or whatever else it is. It's their village that they live in on the other side of the world. There are probably about 10 million of those places out there, and or communities. And to be very generous, there are probably about 5 million places that have churches. And that's a generous estimate. That means there are probably about half the places of the world, maybe more, that don't have a church. That means when someone gets up in the morning, if they knew about a Jesus, they wouldn't know where they could go and learn. If they thought that there was a God who created the world and wanted to have a relationship with him, or even wondered if that was a possibility. I grew up with people knocking on my door literally and asking that question: is there a God who created this world, and how do I know him? It's about relationship. There's no community of faith, there's no local church in their place that is the salt and light to their community, who pushes back darkness, who fights for the widow and the orphan and the injustice in their community, the injustice that people don't know that God made a way. And so that's at the kind of that macro level, if you will. That's the big problem that we're facing. Then let's take it down to a really simple question that I've heard young people ask in Africa. They basically say there's a village up the road who doesn't have a church. There aren't any Christians that we know about. Nobody knows Jesus. And somebody needs to go tell them, what if I had my part in telling them? What if I could tell them, what if I could be the carrier of the gospel there? It ends up being a church planter, but that sounds like a really big, intimidating word. I'm going to go be a church planter somewhere. But to say I'm going to carry the gospel, that sounds a whole lot more simple. So I think of a young guy, 17 years old, fighting in a place where he doesn't have a good relationship with his dad. His dad doesn't even care that he eats food every day. His mom is struggling as a small business owner buying and selling used clothes, and they have a garden to be able to sustain. So, like, we get it. That sounds familiar to just humanity globally, right? And this young fellow, while he's working in his garden, looks up and recognizes there's a village up the road and they don't have the gospel. So he goes up the road and he starts sharing the gospel with people. And if my memory serves me, it's 17 or 18 people that he led to Christ in a matter of a couple of weeks, because he just kept going back. Do you know Jesus? Do you want to have a relationship with Jesus? 17, 18 people met Jesus, and he says, I accidentally started a church and I didn't really mean to. Now, these people trusted Christ, started being discipled, learned what it means to just read the word, read the Bible, and say, this is what it means to follow Jesus in community. And this has turned into a church or become one. And so he'll say, I'm not a pastor. But what's really fun is this. Now, just past teenage years, he's 21 now, would look back and say, they call me pastor in that village. I don't know that I call myself a pastor. They just recognize today that I'm the reason that the church got started. And so my favorite phrase that he and others have said is, because of me, the gospel will go there. And that can be an individual, and that could be corporately to a whole village. But to take responsibility and say, I'm going to tell my neighbor across the street, I'm going to tell my sister, my brother, my coworker, because of me, the gospel will go to that life, or it will go to that community. And it's that responsibility we all have to be carriers of the gospel to the darkest places.
Yeah, that's so good. You know, in Guatemala, where we work with our rescue centers and safe houses, one of the things we often ask women is, do you know who Jesus is? And many of those women will say, yeah, he's that guy on the cross. And my next question is always, do you know why he's on the cross? And the majority answer is no. And if they think they have an answer, it's that, well, he's dying for good people. And I always ask, are you one of those good people? And always the answer is no, I'm not. And so this just incredible. I mean, we see we're working right now with a medical clinic in a village in Guatemala, which you would think, oh, that's a rich country. They've got churches, not no way. There's no gospel light in that whole entire village. And we're praying, God send, let's see a work done here so that people can have community. So I so understand what you're saying, because there's so many places around the world that if somebody doesn't go and bring the gospel to them, they're never going to hear a clear presentation of scripture.
That's it. That's it. It's everyone to everywhere. And it's an invitation for each one of us.
I had
Really
the
good.
opportunity with our women. Yesterday we had one of our missions participants stand in front and give a really wonderful devotional about the alabaster jar. And she is a daughter of somebody who's come before and I, to come who's come to the Dominican before. And I talked to them because I'm third generation in ministry. JJ, you're second generation. Reba, you're second generation, third generation. I mean, we all have enjoyed a legacy and some generational just blessing of, the people that come before us. And talking to the women that we serve and getting them to see what you're saying, JJ, is that they have an opportunity to start a legacy, to start that the generation is going to start with them. And so when I told them, I'm like, this girl, she's here. She's the age of a lot of your children here, teenage. And her mother's coming forward. Like, think about what you guys want to see your children do and even get them to just carry the gospel into their homes when, I think that's exciting just to understand that, okay, we've enjoyed being the blessing of second, third generation Christian and Christian families, but talking to somebody who's like, you've got the opportunity to start this legacy with you. And so understanding from that perspective, like you said, JJ, just being able to take it where you are instead of being this, intimidating presence of, okay, I'm a church planter. No, I'm carrying the gospel wherever I go. That's beautiful. And I think we all, even the listeners need to be like, no, I'm headed to the car pickup line. I'm headed to my job. I'm headed to wherever, and I'm going to take it there. And I think it's just a more beautiful, the more biblical way to think about it.
Allie, my wife, I tell her she does better ministry than I do. She's now a teacher, and someone walked into her recently and said, "What's different about you? I don't know that I've met anybody like you. This is like this week." And she says, "It's hope." And the person kind of gave her a sideways look, and she says, "Well, I'm a person of faith. I have a relationship with Jesus." And her answer was, "I've met a lot of Christians, but I don't know that I've met anybody quite like you." And I think that's the point. I think that's the when we live it out, when we are ready to give an answer to anybody who asks it, when we live it out in recognizing that it's in our everyday life that we have the best opportunities. It's not just on the mission trip. It's not just that one week a year that you're able to do this, but your opportunity is every day. And that's where I'm trying to grow. I'm trying to look for those opportunities, pray for those opportunities in my everyday.
So good. Well, I know that a lot of people listening sometimes are in ministry. We find that a lot of people who listen to our podcast are in ministry of some sort. And so this is a great question, I think, for them. How have you and Melissa navigated ministry and marriage and parenting from the mission field back to the US, all of the transitions that you've done, but you're just locked in ministry? How have you navigated some of that? And maybe what are some things that you've learned along the way that would be a help to those who are listening, who are right in the middle of that right now, trying to navigate marriage and parenting in the middle of ministry?
Well, first of all, we haven't got it all right. Let's throw it out there. And if you meet the people that have got it all right, please introduce us. I'd love to meet them.
That or run.
It's my, but I think we learn together. We learn from each other in this, and so we're grateful. And We're grateful for people who have invested into our lives because that's where we've probably learned the most as we've walked through this season. I think it's been really helpful for us in many seasons. We have hard ones and we have easier ones, and I think we can all look back and we don't always know it in the moment. So for Melissa and I, probably one of the most helpful things, especially early on, our kids are just in those teenage years right now, three daughters. We're not always awesome with a getaway date. That's just not good for us. I'm starting with our relationship here, on a weekly rhythm. But what we are halfway decent at is getting away about once every 3 months for a night and catching 48 hours away to be able to take some time. Allie, you and Gary do a spectacular job with that. I'm always encouraged by the way you have good rhythms in your life for that. And so that's been a good time for us. And then we just sometimes call them a mini date. Hey, Mel, let's go on a mini date. That means go on the back porch, get a cup of coffee. It's 30 minutes. We lovingly say to our kids, hey, go away. We're on a mini date. Don't interrupt us. And they know what that means. And it's just fun. We're just sitting on the back porch, just connecting on a simple conversation. So I think there's that place. I think in our transitions around the world, Melissa's done a fabulous job in helping our daughters to stay grounded and keep perspective. It's about slowing down in the moment and saying, do you remember why we do what we do? And then sometimes making sure that ahead of time there are things that we carry from one place of the world to the other. So we have some familiar. You're allowed to be little, you're allowed to grow up. My daughters are sitting here listening to me as I'm talking on this podcast, probably going to tell me afterwards what I got right and what I got wrong. But I would say the number of times that when we get to a place, we're going to set up a room for them, their space, it feels safe, it feels familiar, and we pick up something that feels like family tradition in this. I think that's been a really, really good thing for us. We celebrate the holidays well. Allie, you might appreciate this. I came back to the States as a ninth grader, and I go to SeaWorld. We're living in Florida, and everybody in this stadium watching Shamu puts their hands up in the air, and they have four letter symbols that they do as they sing along in this song. And it starts with a Y and MCA. And I look around as the only person in this whole place and have no clue what this YMCA song is. I've never heard this thing before in my life. And I think, I'm not from around here. And so intentionally, we did little things for our family, like let's have a playlist so that when our kids come back to the States, they know how to feel it. And they understand what this means. So we went to a ball game this summer, went to a Braves game, just something I've followed throughout life. And I think the winning moment was seventh inning stretch, take me out to the ball game. They heard Harry Carey, so now they knew how to sing that song. And so it's helping you relate on both sides of the world. The other side of that is sometimes it's helpful to know it. And sometimes it's about equipping a person to navigate through the uncomfortable and the I don't know. And it's okay to not know. It's okay not to know the culture there. It's okay to not say, I've mastered this thing. Let me just sit in this posture of humility and go, I don't know. Can you teach me? Can you help me? Help me get better. Help me learn. Help me not make a mistake here. You be my teacher. I don't care how old you are, how experienced you are. You're going to help me here. And so I think it's a both and then a lot of grace on the other side when you don't get it right because you don't always. But it doesn't mean you don't try again the next day.
I probably should have done that with Gary, really, to be honest with you, because the other day, this is, you see, so funny because my parents did that exactly what you're talking about, just made sure I was just going to be honest with you, made sure I wasn't a weird missionary kid,
Yes,
going
yes.
back to,
So
wherever I
hard. It's
was.
so hard.
And so I think for the most part we got it, but I didn't do that with, I wasn't intentional about that with my husband, Gary, who grew up so sheltered that the other day everybody was talking about Buc-ee's and he's heard of Buc-ee's. And I was like, hey, did you see that reel of Lenny Kravitz walking through Buc-ee's? And all of the kids like, no way, that's so cool. And my husband goes, who's Lenny Kravitz? And I was like, dude, I'm the one who grew up on a mission field and you don't know. And so it was, so I need to be more intentional about getting Gary a little bit more, not worldly, just, but not, not so sheltered,
We'll
but
broaden his horizon a little bit. That's
he's
it.
never even Top Gun. We've teased him a million times about this. But I think, understanding the intentionality, like you've said, about the making these transitions and just like and communicating and saying, here's and getting us back to that call. I think that's what my parents did. It's like, why are we doing this? And even when I was in college and my parents were moving back to the States and really didn't want to, but understand that that's what the Lord was doing, is just communicating that call to the family and with the family and talking through it. And like you said, just it's going to be another hard transition, but hey, we're used to it and we're going to navigate it together. And I mean, I just think that's beautiful.
So good. Hey, well, JJ, let me ask you, maybe there's somebody listening who's praying about feeling like God might be nudging them a little bit into the world of missions. What advice would you give to a young person feeling called to missions today?
Listen to God, and if the call is there, it won't go away. And continue to learn and grow. Surround yourself with a community of people who can help you, advise you, and teach you, not tell you exactly what to do, not be necessarily prescriptive, but find those people, and if you don't have them, pray for them. Or reach out to even Reba, you and Allie. Reach out to you guys and say, who do you know out there? Who can we get connected to? I think that's the first step. Just listen and surround yourself. Don't back down on it. And then don't underestimate preparation. Every single day is a day of preparation. And so much of the time when we have the we're discerning a call and we have zeal in our life, we might want to jump the gun or go a little bit too fast. And sometimes that can lead to a lot of heartache on a foreign field. And so being well prepared, and then I would tell people so much of the time it starts with, I want to go to a place, just tell me where to go and I'll go do it. And I like to advise people, find people you want to do this with. Go do this in community with people. The place matters, but probably not as much as you think it does. And the people you surround yourself with in this life will help you to become what you're supposed to be more like Jesus. And so discern that. And recognize that in a changing world, what we needed in the global space in missions 50 years ago is probably not what we need today. Many times it's a come alongside. It's not as much of a missions to some places. It's a missions with. It's a let's go with this person to this place. It's advising, consulting, serving, and making a hero out of somebody else. And I say that understanding the world is a very, very big place. And so that's where just ask good questions and be surrounded by good people who will help you to say, can I reframe that thought? Can I push back on that assumption? And if those advisors in your life are not asking those kind of questions, keep looking for people who will push back on you and not just tell you that sounds like a great plan, go for it.
All right.
That's
So
awesome.
tech specifically, if you have some, if you could go back and tell your recently graduated from college person group, what is one thing before stepping into full-time mission ministry, what would that be? Like, what's the one thing that you're like, oh man, and that's not necessarily a regret, but what would be helpful, for the next generation?
I'm grateful at that season of my life, I had mentors that were speaking in. They were pushing me to read, and that helped a lot. Today's world is different in that we hit Togo and cell phones were just now growing as a thing. Data was not a thing. The world was not as small as it is today, not just with the way the internet has gone everywhere, but now in an AI world where it's exponential. We thought we already hit that and we just did it again. It's the it's changed things significantly. I would spend time traveling around on a field for maybe 6 months and re-questioning the assumptions that I had. And what I thought I knew, I would ask even more questions. Now, Allie, this is coming from someone who had spent a lifetime in this country already, but I would challenge those assumptions. What changed? I think probably the biggest thing I noticed was, I grew up speaking French, you grew up speaking Spanish, but when I went back to the field, I had a collegiate level English and a high school level French. And what I recognized that, but I probably didn't recognize that I had some thought patterns that were still stuck in high school self, that were not moved or migrated or growing at that next level. And so I probably would have spent 6 months asking some questions instead of jumping right in to say, where can I help? More of a, what can I learn before I try to help?
I think that's
That
so good. Sorry,
exactly.
Alec.
No, go ahead. I one of the things that Gary and I both were not expecting me to go through culture shock coming back to the Dominican, having grown up there, and now I'm there, but as a wife and a team member instead of just the kid.
Right.
That was a huge transition I wasn't expecting. So I'm like, I know the language, I know the culture, and so that I did experience that. But anyway, go ahead, Reba.
No, I was just going to say, I think there's so much wisdom in that because I think there's a pressure or a sense of pressure, whether we put it on ourselves or whether we feel like it's put on us by others, to go to the field and like do something awesome. And many times you don't even know the right questions to ask. There's this learning curve. And I think being okay to sit down in that and not be, superwoman or superman, the missionary, but being able to sit down in that context and ask great questions and learn a lot of things so that now you have a foundation to build off on is so important, and cannot be underestimated at any point because I think so many times people jump in feeling like they're equipped only to realize 6 months later that they've made a mess of some things along the way.
Hey, even fast forward from that initial time, 2009, it was probably 7 years down the road. We did something and helped some students in a church that appeared to need some help in something. And a pastor sat me down afterwards. We were debriefing a service and a meeting together. And he said, "You did a great job. You helped people." He said, "But I don't know if you asked them if you helped fix their problem. They might have actually asked for help on a different problem." And what I heard was, you fixed the wrong problem. It was a problem to be fixed, but it wasn't the problem that needed to be fixed. And I haven't, that one was not lost on me. It's been years since I've heard that, and I've replayed that in my mind really many times. It was a gift that he gave as feedback. And in so many places of the world where honor is a value, we don't give transparent feedback like the West is used to receiving it. And so anytime someone will give you an honest assessment and a feedback, it's a gift. It is gracious and kind when they'll tell you how you can get better, because who really wants to think they're doing a great job only to find out they fixed the wrong problem? And so I'm grateful for that pastor and what he said to me.
Oh,
That
that's
is
good.
good.
I mean, to first of all, the relationship that you had with him, that he felt the trust and the confidence that he could speak into that. I've had many of those conversations, like, Ali, hey, listen. We love you. Just sit down for a second, and so I've that's happened to us before as well. But it's such a gift, like you said, is just listening to feedback and understanding that. And we've told missionaries, and this is my new phrase, like nobody is expecting great things of you right now. Just survive, get used to living here, because if you're going to be in here for the long haul, just relax and learn from others. Learn, especially this is your community. So that's great.
So much of the time we're pushed to produce, and we can't give what we don't have, and we have to give out of an overflow of who we are, and who we are matters more than what we do. And so if we don't take the time to do that and to listen and learn in our community, I think we can get ahead of ourselves sometimes.
And it's so easy, I think, to step into a new situation and feel like you see everything real clearly and you have answers that people who've been there for 20 years don't have. And all of a sudden, what a mess you create. Because you just got off the bus and you're like, oh, I've shown up, I got the answers. And I think that there really is a humility that comes with being willing to sit back and let God work on you and learn in a way that makes you really effective in future forward.
That's good. That's good.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there a passage of scripture maybe, or just a maybe the book of the Bible or an area that you've been, God just is brings this back in your life, but just maybe you can think of something that man, this passage of scripture, this part of scripture really has been a huge blessing in my life through the years, and here's why.
You know, I started early on having some favorites, but the one that has probably stuck with me the longest would be Matthew, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. And if you put God first, he takes care of all the rest. And I think that's the piece where when I trust him and keep him as a priority in all of my decisions, boy, does he ever bless in ways. You know, there are times that I can look back and I've looked up and said, Lord, thank you. That was the gift that I needed that you gave me. That was the one that spoke to my heart today. It wasn't huge. Maybe no one else would have noticed it, but I think I put you first, but boy, did you ever love me well. And so I think that's the one that probably continues to stay through seasons of my life and is the most pronounced.
Thank you so
Good.
much. We've got a couple of things left. I wanted to ask you specifically in the work you're doing right now, how are some ways that listeners can pray for you or partner with you and your family and your ministry? And I would love to hear about that.
So I'm grateful for this season. Boy, is it ever fun to watch what God is doing. I think we're in a season today, recording here in 2025, that collaboration is key in the ministry space. I think if any one person, church, or ministry could do it all by themselves and reach their whole country, they would have already done it. And we would look at that ministry and go, you did it, bravo. But I think all of us look at each other and say, this is bigger than any one of us. And so most of my time today is in a collaborative space where people are sitting together and saying, you know, going back to Reba, what you were talking about in Guatemala in one village, my mind goes to how about the other 20 villages and who else is trying around you to do this in other villages? And how do you help each other and talk with each other? Collaboration takes time, it takes intentionality. Trust is so hard to build because it's only built with relationship in it, and it then it takes more time. But the my space today, I'm spending my time trying to serve ministries that are church planting and looking at areas of the world and saying, what would it take over the next X amount of years to be able to see a church of hope in every single community? And I think about people on the other side of it. They don't care who carried the gospel to them. Sometimes they never know the person's name. They definitely don't know a ministry's name. They might not even know a church's name. But they sure do know when they met Jesus. And so, to keep it in perspective, that if we collaborate together, the question is, did God give us an impossible task with the Great Commission? I don't think he did. And so, why couldn't it be us? Why can't it be our lifetime? Why could our generation not be the generation that sees this? And we have more at our fingertips than we've ever had before. I don't think that our problem is that we're not working hard enough or that we don't have a sharp enough strategy. I think so much of the time it's that we don't work together and cheer each other on and root each other on and give each other, you know, attaboys and say, great job. And so that's where I'm getting to spend my time today in trying to collaborate to serve with others in the global space. I foresee in the next couple of years, we'll be at a place where we'll see a first couple of nations that'll have a church in every single village in their community. And if they don't have a church, it's because they were run out, beat out, persecuted out, but it's not because someone didn't lovingly, clearly share the message of Jesus with them. And so that's what I get up in the morning thinking about. And that's why we started just a few minutes ago talking about seasons, and I would say seasons and stages. The Lord has used every one of those to help teach me something, and I'm continuing to learn today how to collaborate in a different way. And so it's a journey that we're on right now.
That's cool.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, JJ. Like I did warn you about this in the email, we're going to end the podcast with just a few quick rapid fire questions.
All right.
And Reba and I kind of go back and forth and grill you. It's really just to make sure that you weren't the sheltered missionary. It's to double check that and to really have you prove your point. I'm teasing, but we wanted to just go and I'll go first. And this is, and we'll just go back and forth. But the first question we always ask is, what is a book lately that has impacted you, or just a book over your ministry that you kind of keep going back to?
Probably the one that I go back to the most is The Making of a Leader by J. Robert Clinton. It talks about the way that God allows lessons in a person's life. He also went on to write Connecting, which talks about mentoring and relationships. That would be one of those in probably the, well, let's go back to a conversation we had, Allie, years ago. You talk about foreign to familiar. You were the first, that was the first one that you probably recommended, and that's been one I've recommended probably as much as any book out there ever.
That's good.
That's awesome. All right. So, what do you enjoy doing in your free time?
I love to ride a road bike. I love to cycle. It's one of my favorite things to do. I also kind of have a thing for coffee, and so I roast and do pour overs and that kind of stuff. But a road bike is one of my favorite things. It clears my mind.
Oh, how
Cool.
fun. What is something about you that people often get wrong?
I would say in the West, people probably don't recognize that I've spent half of my life in Africa, and half of me thinks that way, and I love it. I tell people I've spent half my life, and much of my heart is in Africa.
Yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely.
that's good. So favorite movie?
I could enjoy something like a For Love of the Game. I could look at a, my wife would say it's a Tom Cruise movie that we'd probably watch together. Probably something in there. She's gonna
Yeah.
pick. I'm gonna sit and watch. I hope I stay awake. Let's be honest.
Okay, there
All right. So, as you're enjoying whatever favorite movie you have, what is the favorite meal? And don't tell me it's bush rat from Togo, because I've
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's lasagna, and we end with like mint chocolate chip ice cream.
Oh, there you go.
Well, there we go. All right. Give me a, what's a snapshot of an ordinary moment in your life that brings you great joy?
Memories with family, memories with my wife and kids. Time goes way too fast. And so the beauty of the ordinary, that sometimes I can be prone to look for the next big mountain to climb instead of taking time in that moment. And that's probably what brings me the greatest joy. It's good.
So, pinging off of that, what are you deeply grateful for?
Relationships. One of my daughters asked me years ago, we were sitting in a situation where we're looking at a village in poverty, and she looked at me and she said, Dad, are we rich? We drove in a car. And I said, we're very, very rich. I said, look at all of our friends and look at all of our relationships that we have. And so I value friendships. I'm so grateful for that. And that's just one thing, because you asked for one thing.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Well, we always close with this question because in a Rooted Deep podcast, you have to ask this one. But what keeps you deeply rooted?
My relationship with Jesus. I'm not convinced that I'll ever walk through a scenario that he can't walk me through, and he will be faithful. How he shows up, I don't know. What the end result is, I don't know. How high the cost is, I don't know. But I'm convinced that he'll be faithful in whatever that is.
It's good.
Yeah. His track record with me has been really good, and it's been faithful even longer than me.
Well,
Yeah.
thank you so much, JJ, for taking this time with us. And I wrote down the book, Making of a Leader. I'm gonna grab it. Looks like Reba's heard of it. She's definitely gonna look in. Maybe she'll get me a copy for my next birthday present or something. But thank you so much, JJ, for your time today, and tell your girls that are sitting right there that we think you did a great job. And so this is, you said what we wanted you to say. So it is a blessing to have you with us today. And is there, is there a way that we can pray for you and your family as we close the podcast?
I would say absolutely. Would you pray with us? I'm going to do a personal and a ministry. I would say as we walk through this journey, that we'll be faithful as a family and we'll have the courage to answer and keep our yes on the table. Yes, 20 years ago looks different than yes today. Courage to keep the yes there. And then the big dream is, let's see some nations, starting with a place like Togo and many others, have a gospel church in every single community. And I want to see that in the next couple of years. And so that's the big faith. Lord, would you allow us to be a part of seeing this? So it goes both ways. And so to say to both of you, thanks so much for your time on this, for asking the questions, honoring so well, serving the community in this, and allowing me to be able to share a little bit of our story. So grateful.
It's been great to have you. We always love having interviews because we love to hear another person's perspective on life. And we always think something you say is going to connect. We never don't believe that God's got somebody listening who needs to hear exactly what you said today. So it's always exciting to hear those stories and find out who was listening and what they needed from the interview today. So as always, we hope that you'll stay rooted deep. You can connect with us again by reaching out through our email resources. So just check all the info right here in our podcast description. Until next time, stay really deep.
Thank you for listening to Rooted Deep. To learn more about Dare for More Ministries, go to dareformore.org and look up Mercy Workshop at mercyjewelry.org.